We are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast, episode number 77. Hello.
Yes, yes, yes.
Hello, Christopher. That's Christopher.
Hello.
And that's Andrew.
Hello.
And I'm Patrick. We're brothers and we're geeks. And we talk about geeky stuff, and here we are, 77. Let's go. August 1st.
Greetings, boys. How are you today? It's excellent to hear your voices and not see you.
Yes.
It is all those things. I don't want to see your faces.
All those things are excellent.
I definitely do not want to see your faces. Your voices are fine, though.
I agree. Voices are fine.
Voices are fine.
For all of our loyal listeners out there, a little inside baseball about how we do this. We make a Skype call, and we talk to each other. But we don't do video because we all hate each other, how we look.
That's
basically. pretty much.
We think we're gross.
Pretty much true.
We make each other physically ill by looking at each other.
You definitely make the rest of us physically ill.
I've looked at you too much in my life.
Has a good beard. Patrick is a member of the beard club, and so yes. He and I...
Beard some shape. Beard is a little too wildling at this point, I think.
Consider the source.
Yeah.
You don't get to comment at all on
So we are being led at the moment by, can we say, a mad king president? So I believe winter's coming, my friend.
Not a mad king.
An elected official. So I feel like winter is coming, my friend, and you need to prepare yourself.
Winter is here.
Winter is here. Correct.
Yeah, we'll get into that later because holy smokes, this game.
Oh, yes. Yes. Game of Thrones update. Oh, I love it.
Can't even. But first,
spoilers. Yes.
We got to talk. San Diego Comic-Con happened.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the first episode after Comic-Con ended.
None of us went.
None of us went. Correct.
Sad. It's very sad.
We have gone many times in the past, and unfortunately we missed it in the last couple of years, and we need to figure out a way to get
back. Correct.
When people ask me, they're like, are you going to go to San Diego Comic-Con this year? I'm like, no, I didn't get passes. And they say, well, why not? And it's like, because it sells out in 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like trying to get tickets to the Super Bowl.
And it's random.
Yes.
What people don't realize is that if we're probably some of the 1% of the most motivated in the world to try and get tickets to this thing, right?
Yeah.
But what they have done to combat the people who have five computers running at the same time and browsers open, because that was the problem when they made it all online. The problem was is that people with much higher computer skills than I or Andrew or Patrick would be able to log on and manipulate the internet to allow them to get early in the queue in order to up their chances of being able to get a ticket.
Okay. Yep. Is this something that like people can resell? Have you heard anything about that?
Or
is it just for themselves?
You cannot resell because the tickets are personalized to you.
Yeah,
this
but like
all before the they can game the system. Nobody's checking your ID.
Right. Right.
But this is they've instituted enough controls in the system now that you can't like resell.
I kind of remember somebody checking my ID. I don't know, but that's weird, right? Couldn't you just bullshit, like say you're not, you don't have your ID with you?
It was easier before.
I'm Bob Smith. Give me my pass. You know,
they would check
ID for sure.
Okay,
at the con, they would check your driver's license.
Yeah, they instituted all these controls in order to avoid exactly what you're talking about, which is scalpers buying 10 tickets and then selling them on the sidewalk.
So, well, I mean, because there are legitimate business people who go to Comic-Con and they get collectibles that they resell for profit.
They have a different badge.
I understand, but I'm saying there are collectors, private collectors who will sell things.
Yeah, private collectors.
Who would pay $500 for a one-day pass to Comic-Con because they go wait in line for Comic-Con exclusives.
The only thing they would do is stand in the line.
I feel like this is really uninteresting. Like, let's talk about what was at the show.
It's not uninteresting. Wait, it's perfectly interesting.
It's tough to get tickets. That's the end of the story. I feel like
it's random. The way that they've instituted to follow up on Andrew's key point, which was You're not going? You didn't get tickets? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, now the system is, for the last 3 years in a row, is it, Andrew? Four, maybe?
Three or four, yeah.
It's everyone online is in a waiting room online, and then your number is drawn randomly to give you the opportunity to buy tickets. That's the system now. It's not if you're in there early. It is everybody gets in at the same time. You wait until they pick your number, and then if your number gets picked, you get an opportunity to buy tickets.
Whoa.
Yep.
Do you guys hear that? Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
Whoa, what is happening?
Okay. I don't know. But
hold on. Sorry about that. My microphone took a dump. I think I got it fixed.
Let's hope.
Yep.
Cool.
You were kind of the key technical component of this podcast.
Yeah,
you are the expert, dude.
My mic just started getting crusty. I have no idea why. Loose connection or something weird. Yeah, I had to reset everything.
That's weird.
Sorry about that, guys. We're back.
Things happen.
So you guys were talking about Comic-Con?
Yeah, no, we just, and, you know.
Content.
Content.
What were the best things you saw?
So I kind of the things that jumped out to me is, like, there was another Ragnarok trailer, which showed a lot more of the story, and I'm really excited about that movie. I think that's going to be great. Yes. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a lot. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Very funny. They are definitely playing up the comedic aspect of making it. I mean, Thor's so earnest, and he's kind of a goofball when you plug him into this.
The past two were very serious. They were very serious. Like, there's a couple of parts were fun. Right.
He's kind of this old, you know, I'm larger than life hero, and I'm, I'm an Asgardian, and blah, blah, blah. But it definitely seems to be playing up the absurdity of Thor and his interactions with other characters, which I think is great. I think I read somewhere, too, after the trailer dropped. And the trailer looks great. It's so colorful. It's definitely taking on a vibe kind of off of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, it's got a very Guardians of the Galaxy vibe. Yeah.
Which I don't mind. I think that's fine. I think it'll be interesting for Thor to see how he fits into that, because he takes himself so seriously.
Right.
But that's that a lot of scenes were improvised, which is interesting for a superhero movie to see how much improvising they do in a movie like this, and how much comedy they try to mine for these different interactions. So see. Right.
Yeah.
I was excited by that trailer as well. Another trailer that
looks good, yeah.
I was very excited for, because I'm chomping at the bit to watch the series on Netflix, is The Defenders.
Yeah.
They released a
super
trailer
excited.
That gives, yeah, they and initial reviews that I'm seeing indicate that it's pretty good, that it's got the same kind of, like, team-up kind of charm back and forth between the heroes that the original Avengers had.
Oh, wow.
Which is a good sign.
Yeah,
so, and the trailer gives us more information about the plot and who the villain might be. And,
yeah, who is Sigourney Weaver?
The character's name is Alexandra, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Is she out of the comics?
Not much has been revealed so far.
Yeah, have we looked? Has anybody taken the time to look that up? I haven't.
I have not dug into that.
Yeah.
I'm going to let the show.
I have dug into it, and they're not revealing. They're not revealing.
Well, because, like, a big like villain of all the shows have been the Hand. You know, they played some part in all the series a little bit.
Well, Elektra is back, so we know that.
Right.
I'm sure Alexandra has some connection with all of them.
Well, and then in the trailer, there I remember seeing footage of her talking to Madame Gao. So Madame Gao is free from the weird Hand stronghold that she was in Iron Fist, and she's obviously working with Sigourney Weaver's character. So it's interesting. I'm very excited about that. That's August 18th, right, Andrew? Is that right?
I've taken the day off from work, so I can just
binge. Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
I mean, dude.
It's eight, so I'm just gonna binge watch.
Hell yeah, dude! Get it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm pumped about it. So,
what else? Justice League trailer? Another Justice League trailer?
4 minutes of footage.
Yeah.
It's a long, big trailer. Each character has, like, a sustained section of the trailer. Like, you get to know a little bit more about the Flash, you get to know a little bit more about Wonder Woman and what she's doing now.
Also a lot more comedic. The Flash is cracking jokes, Aquaman's cracking jokes.
Aquaman's,
you know, it's, you know, Alfred is cracking jokes in this trailer. Like, is DC like, ooh, we're too serious the last we need to relax a little and have a little more fun, because Enjoy Wonder Woman was kind of fun.
It's a team up movie. Right. It's fun.
Right. It's supposed to be fun.
Just let it be fun.
Exactly. It's a comic book movie. You have people with superheroes dressing up in costumes, you know, fighting crime. Come on. Be fun. It should be adventurous.
It's pretty damn absurd.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, hopefully they're going towards that. I mean, I don't want it to be like another Avengers movie where it's just team up and they crack jokes at each other. And
no, they got to carve out a different niche. They got to carve out a different tone. Yeah.
And I think that, I think they will, because as much as we love the Black Widow and what Scarlet does with that character, the success of Wonder Woman and the kind of star that appears Gal Gadot really is, and how she connects with fans. I mean, Wonder Woman could be the kind of the breakout of finally seeing her on screen in her own movie and then in Justice League. And she looks to be a leader, you know, taking, she's at the forefront, uniting these people. I mean, right. Batman's seeking him out, but it looks as though
she's
Wonder Woman is bringing everybody together.
She's obviously the most powerful person who's, you know, well, now that Superman's gone.
She's kind of, as much as Superman in the comics is kind of the shining example that everybody follows, it looks like Wonder Woman's playing that role in the movie.
Right.
People are following her because she is the most heroic.
Well, and at the end of the trailer, there's a scene where, like, Alfred's in the cave and he's talking to someone off screen. Everybody assumes that's Superman. Is that what you guys...
I'm almost certain. There's 100% Superman comes back from the dead.
Right.
I think it's 100%.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely in the movie because, I mean, he's credited in there. And I read a stupid freaking Polygon article about his mustache. Did you guys read that? Stupid shit.
Yeah, the reshoot.
Like, so,
have to remove it
because he has to wear this mustache for like
this other
movie
or something.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh my god,
he has a mustache.
Absurd.
So absurd. But the trailer makes it look great. And, a little aside, because you know my Gal Gadot love is very strong right now. There's a video that's gone viral, of her at Comic-Con during an autograph signing, and like a little girl comes up to the table.
I shared that on
Twitter. You did. Yeah. Yeah. And she's cosplaying as Wonder Woman, and you don't really see the girl's face, but the reporting is that she's emotional and she's starting to cry because, you know, she's so overwhelmed or whatever. And Gal Gadot like takes her hands and is like, you know, leans
totally
in
supportive
and totally supportive and engaged.
That's awesome.
And, you know, telling her, you know, just reassuring her that they're friends and how good it is to be together. And it seems so genuine and so open. And she just gets it. She is really making an effort, and it's so genuine to connect with her fans. It's just, it's working on so many levels
young,
with me. Her
supportive
being
young
right
girls.
So awesome. It's so awesome to see, finally.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's female superhero movies. I mean, and this was the first that was actually good, you know. There's been others,
really,
but
she's doing so well. And, obviously Captain Marvel's coming in a couple years in the Marvel Universe, and I have Brie Larson, and we'll see what she can do with that. She's a tremendous actress, so all the more roles that they can play to
it's just
be
like
an example.
Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are just kind of iconic. I mean, Captain Marvel is going to be probably a great movie because it's Brie Larson, it's Marvel, and they've basically figured out their formula by now. But Wonder Woman is iconic, so they needed to do it right. People love Wonder Woman, you know, and they did it right. So that's I'm excited for that movie, even though I feel like DC hasn't been doing it right. I'm still going to see this movie for sure.
Comes out in November.
Stranger Things 2, like, trailer, wow. Not just a teaser. Wow. Awesome.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, my God. So excited for that show.
And the it music in the trailer like even is more, thriller. Even more scary.
Dude, I mean, the...
They ramp up the shit.
The music, like, the thriller music, so good. So yep. good. It's like Thriller mixed with the Stranger Things theme. And it's just this awesome. It's so awesome. It. So
yeah, I can't even... That comes out October 27th. I don't have the day, you know, set to take off from work, but I'm strongly considering it.
Just to binge totally. Yeah, when is that?
I mean, you've got tons of days that you could take off, dude, so take it off.
When does that one drop, Andrew?
October 27th.
October. Oh, my God. Yeah, so long away.
It's Halloween weekend, essentially.
Dude. That. For real.
Yeah, no, that's going to be running at our house.
I've written up something for the website.
Yeah.
You know, gives a little summary of Comic-Con and also summarizes the trailers that we have talked about a little bit here.
Mm-hmm. We'll include links to this week. Yeah.
Posted this week. But, yeah, no. The sheer dump of content that comes with Comic-Con...
Oh, I gotta mention the Black Panther one, dude, and the panel Black Panther reaction. Did you see the reaction and the crowd reaction trailer? Holy shit!
That showed at Hall H has not arrived online anywhere officially, which I'm totally fine with. Sometimes there needs to be exclusives for people who wait in line.
There was a lot of stuff that they showed that hasn't been released. They showed a little footage of Captain Marvel too. It was just a teaser. But, like, there's no footage of that on the internet yet either.
Well, they haven't started. I mean, there's, like, concept art and stuff like that.
There's supposed to be some footage of Infinity War that they showed, too. But but not a finished product, they said. Not for release.
But, no, the Black Panther panel, all of the cast was there.
Yeah.
And they, how the cast reacted to the little footage they showed in Hall H. There's videos of that's online, and they were just going
nuts
with what they saw.
Going nuts, yeah.
That's awesome.
That movie comes out in February 18th. I just read an article
very
today.
Excited.
And one of our, I feel like it's one of our favorite books of this show, the podcast, Ready Player One, they finally showed some footage of that.
Bonkers.
Looks bonkers. I was kind of wondering how they were going to do this movie, and it's awesome. It looks crazy.
Well, I am.
I gotta say, I'm on the fence.
Really?
Whether they can pull it off.
Ooh, it's just a lot. Yeah. You're right to be skeptical because there's so much. It's very overwhelming.
I love that book, but I don't know if it's filmable.
That's a tough movie to make.
Sideways.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Steve, and how meta is it? Think about Ernest Klein and his love of 80s culture and his love of 80s pop culture and the fact that Steven Spielberg is directing a movie and Ernest Klein has so many references to Spielberg movies in the book.
It's crazy.
It's gonna be so nuts. Meta. It's so like folding in on itself. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I know. I
understand. Yeah.
It could be just pure fan service that goes off the rails.
Totally.
Or it could be a really fun.
Well, the whole book is fan service, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what it's all about. But so I hope they do it justice. I really do.
I agree.
They pull it off.
Yeah.
I think if anyone can do it, it's Spielberg. So that gives me very, very, very much hope.
That makes me feel a little better about it, but still, you're right. It's a little scary. Did you guys have anything else? Those are the ones written down here. So
nothing. I mean, there's lots we can talk about.
There's a lot. There's a lot of
article that will go up.
It'll be up this week.
Andrew wrote it up.
Let's talk some scene. We all saw. I mean, it's not really like a geek movie, but we all saw Dunkirk because it's just amazing.
Christopher Nolan is a freaking genius.
Beautiful movie.
70mm.
I did not. IMAX? I saw it just standard. I plan to go IMAX, but I have not yet.
I'm telling you right now, in all seriousness,
in IMAX.
You've never seen anything like this.
Oh no! I mean, it looked great, just standard. So I can imagine
IMAX
that's
incredible.
Yeah, The music, incredible. The music, like it builds. The music builds, and just keeps drumming along the whole time. There's so much tension, and it's shot
from
beautifully.
Start to finish.
Oh my gosh!
From start to finish, it's so well made.
Yeah.
The structure of it, the passage of time, and how the stories intersect.
Yeah. It's not just the music; it's sound design. It's overall sound design. Totally. Is exquisite.
Yeah.
What struck me about, it's a war movie that, and for so, especially in the last, since Saving Private Ryan and even a little bit before that and since then, war movies have been, they've really been to put you viscerally in the action. They have made the gore and the violence the kind of focus of what happens almost. There's barely any blood in this movie.
Yeah.
There's no limbs, there's no, you know, bowels, there's no exploding people.
It's like, I mean, not even, about that. It's about the struggle of getting off, you know, getting
think
out of
about
there.
How intense and how in the moment you feel with every single character, but you don't see people, you know, blown to bits, and you don't see bullets ripping people apart, and you don't see, you know, none of that exists in this movie. And it's just as immersive as any other war movie, if not more so. Than you've ever seen
the airplane like dogfighting stuff is probably one of the best airplane fights in all of cinema.
Yeah.
Like, it's so amazing, all the stuff that's in
very
that scene.
Very little CG, almost all of it is practical.
I know.
They actually constructed planes and flew them around to look like Spitfires.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's freaking awesome.
It's so awesome.
I love how he does practical stuff like that. He does all that. Yeah, he's very serious about making good movies. You know,
Nolan is working on a whole nother level, and sometimes he's more successful than others. I mean, you can quibble about Interstellar a little bit in terms of its pacing, I think.
Ugh.
But this movie, I really can't find a flaw. I mean, I really can't. Can you guys think of anything? I mean, is it as good a? I really can't. Can you think of a flaw to this movie?
The only thing that I had trouble with was I feel like a lot of the characters look very similar.
I actually kind of,
and I got confused by like who people were sometimes. Just a couple of times, I'm like, who's that? Which guy is that? Like, because they all have dark brown hair.
You know, they're all Brits.
Yeah, it's true.
And I kind of think I understand why he did that. He, you know, the lack of characterization, you know the care, I mean, the captain of the, you know, the old man sailing his yacht,
he's the best. Yeah, he's the most like human, like you have the most connection with him.
I love Kenneth Branagh as the Navy guy standing on the pier orchestrating all of it. Oh my god, he's so good.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was moved at many points during the movie, and it just goes to so many levels.
Totally.
Yeah.
You didn't see Valerian, did you, Andrew?
I did not.
Chris and I saw Valerian. What'd you think, Christopher?
I love his visual style. I really appreciate
Luc Besson.
Mm-hmm, yes, mm-hmm. I really appreciate his science fiction eye.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is at least 20 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead male character actor is terrible.
Oh, he's just got awful, right? Every time he speaks,
Cara Delevingne is
awesome.
She's great. I like her a lot.
Yeah.
The movie, I appreciate his filmmaking a lot because he clearly loves this comic. You know, it's the movie's based on a French comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and he loves it. His father, you know, there's a familial connection between him and his father. I read about, I think, and so this is a long time sort of passion project for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see his deep and abiding love for these characters and this universe, right? So I'm not going to criticize him for sort of all of those, the time and the care and all of that that he put into it. I just think it didn't hold up narratively and is slow in parts, and there's stuff in there that just doesn't need to be in there. You know, if it was 20 minutes less and there was a better male lead, it would be a great movie.
I started to think about Fifth Element and how Bruce Willis is just so much better than this guy, you know? And, like, Bruce Willis, I feel like Fifth Element is not a great movie, but Bruce Willis is so good that it makes it...
I love Fifth Element. I think it's so much
fun. No, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. But you replace Bruce Willis in that role, I think the movie doesn't hold up as well.
Oh, no, it's pure B-movie. It's pure B-movie schlock.
Right, right. Bruce Willis makes it...
carrying the movie.
Right, makes it awesome. And this kid is not Bruce Willis. So
no. Dane DeHaan...
I think that the script wasn't good enough for him to be charming enough for us to like him. I definitely miscast, and the script was just real bad. Like, I love this is something I did like, though, was all the weird technology.
I don't know,
like,
if it was script as much as it was lack of chemistry between the leads.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the script is fine. If they had chemistry,
right?
There was the banter that they were trying to do. It was forced was not natural and smooth because there was no chemistry.
Yeah. You might That's be big. Right. I think the script wasn't strong enough with the two of them not, you know, meshing well.
You put two characters in there with some chemistry, and their timing is better, and their readings of the lines are better in the context that they're in. I think that they work.
Yeah.
But there wasn't any.
You just don't like the main character at all.
No. I didn't like him.
Yeah. I was saying, like, I love the technology, like the weird stuff, like him putting his arm through the box and having it trapped in, like, another dimension.
Yeah, that's crazy and very inventive.
Very
idea.
Inventive.
I mean, it's really interesting.
And, like, them shooting the guard with the dart that makes him, like, control him. That was fun. And the gun that, like, makes it, you shoot the thing, and then there's like a platform in front of you for a couple seconds, and you can run
lots
across
of inventive
it.
Ideas
right.
Like that. It was
lots of really cool, like, inventive, like, tech that I really liked. But just not fun and short, like what you were saying, like, too long, and just not
the
not
alien
great.
Designs are awesome.
Looks great.
Alien designs.
Looks amazing.
And the world building that they do is really interesting and cool.
Yeah.
It's just it's a bummer that it wasn't tighter and
the
lead wasn't good.
I love the first, like, 10 minutes too, where they're, like, showing humans from, like, 1976 to like the future. Like, they do this montage of them, like, starting this big space station.
Really, all set to David Bowie. Great
really
stuff.
Cool. Really, really cool. Yep. Just not a great film.
So I don't think I'm going to see it.
I would rent it. I mean, just
you need to watch it.
Yeah,
Andrew. But you don't need to. Frankly, I think you should see it on the big screen.
It's pretty.
You're missing out because
it's really pretty.
It's freaking awesome.
Did you see it in 3D? I didn't see it in 3D.
No.
But I thought it would probably look good in 3D. So
I saw a headline on the internet today about, is 3D dead? And I hope to God it is.
It's kind of dying. 3D. Yeah.
Dunkirk was shot in IMAX, but it wasn't released in IMAX 3D.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just. No, think about it. Was Spider-Man Homecoming released in 3D? I mean, there was a stretch where all of the Marvel movies had 3D conversions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And was Rogue One released in 3D? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't been to a 3D movie in a while, so.
Yeah.
Possible.
I think they're moving away from the format.
Man, they were selling TVs there for a while that were 3D. That was like the new hot thing.
That shit was dumb.
That's dead.
Totally.
Dead.
Dead technology. If you have a 3D television out there, like, geez. Sorry. what other do we have? Any? Game of Thrones is back. We're three episodes in.
I can't even right now with Game of Thrones, dude.
I'm gonna start off because I'm gonna start off.
I have to say this, that it's been a slow build, but holy shit, there's been plot developments. Yes,
it's so much plot going on.
I've been really disappointed with these three episodes. I'm not gonna lie. So this is the reason. This is the main reason. Is I feel like every episode there's way too much, like, I call it previously on Game of Thrones, because every conversation is like, remember when this happened, blah blah blah, and I have a list of times that they have made reference to something that happened in the past in each episode. Would you like me to read this list?
No.
Why not? It's fun.
Sure,
go
read
ahead.
The list.
So, like, the whole conversation last episode, the third episode, Danny and John are talking, and Danny's like, "Oh yeah, I've gone through all this stuff," and, you know, she basically retold her whole story for everyone. The grandma reminded everybody that she killed Joffrey.
Nobody knew that until now.
Yeah, she said no. After she killed Joffrey, she told what's her name? Her granddaughter.
Oh yeah.
She did. Right.
Marjorie?
Yeah, she told Marjorie.
Marjorie didn't tell anyone.
Was telling Jaime Lannister. And right. I'm okay with...
The fans knew it.
The exposition of Dany and Jon being in the same room and them having to give each other their histories because they don't know each other. And he's only heard... I mean,
I feel
what have they heard
way
about
too much
other?
Of and it, now, dude. Way too much of the dialogue is talking about past shit. It's really annoying. Nothing new is happening.
I had no problem with it.
Yeah.
None of it. I totally disagree.
Maybe I won't read this. Just start... Because
what else is your list?
So remember Hot Pie? Who cares? Remember Namir?
He's a beloved character.
Remember Namiria?
That's a key
who cares?
In Arya's path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is no one living in drag? This is a side point. Why is nobody living at Dragonstone? It's like not even squatters are there. Like. People were living in that abandoned castle that was destroyed by the dragons, and there's
Aaron
no
Hall.
One living there? That was weird to me.
Aaron Hall.
Yeah. Remember in season one when Varys tried to kill Dany? Well, Dany didn't.
Yeah, that's why she correctly asks him about it, confronts him.
Remember how Tyrion was in charge of the sewers? They do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember how the Hound robbed those people and left them for dead? They're dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remember how Sansa got raped?
Yes.
These are all character points.
These are
and
all
that
things.
People are encountering
every
on their new,
conversation. Every conversation is like, let's talk about something that happened in season three. Let's talk
these
about this
that
happened
that
in season
confronting
four.
Confronting their past and trying to move past what happened to them.
But
they're
instead
trying
of
to move on,
I feel like it's
up.
I feel like it's dumbing it down. I feel like nothing good is happening, and they're just talking about stuff that's already happened. That's how I feel these three episodes have been.
Wow.
But Patrick, none of the characters know these things.
But
the
we
fans
do
know it.
But we do.
So they are vitally important plot
I feel
reveals.
Like, I feel like if you did it a couple of times, I'd be okay with it. But every episode, every conversation is like filled with it.
Because they have so few episodes to work with, they have to fill in the gaps for characters in the show.
Okay.
In that world.
All right. All right.
Wow.
Well, obviously you guys like it, and I'm in the wrong. So,
well, you don't like
I think you're in the minority. I don't think it's
so far. This has
wrong.
Been
wrong.
So far, the first
like
three
it?
Episodes have
or
been.
You don't like those pieces of it.
So far, these three episodes have been really underwhelming. The fight between the ships, boring. I was so bored with that. Like, so, not tense at all. Just garbage. And then Theon jumps. Like, I was so mad. I was so mad at Theon for jumping. Like, that's terrible. I mean, the one person he actually gives a shit about, he doesn't try to help.
You don't understand the character and his kind of the feeling of trauma and fear that would reawaken in him when he's faced with a life or death situation.
Yeah.
He's all of the trauma that he dealt with being a slave of Ramsay and abused so badly.
Like, if he's got that much trauma, you can't like, he should
emotional,
just kill
you can't
himself,
make the emotional
man.
Leap to be in that position with him man. Where he would chicken out. You're mad at him?
Yeah.
You can't understand it?
Yeah.
I don't get your point. I don't know where you're coming from on all this.
Hmm.
I don't. I just don't.
Yeah, all right.
I've been very pleased. I've been entertained by every single episode.
Okay.
I thought that each one had, you know, they're building to, you know, each one had good things going on, and they had plot points that, yes, and characters interacting where they talk about their histories. I like all that lore stuff, and I like how they have to justify themselves to each other, and they have to get to know each other, and this is the way that two huge heroes with huge egos would talk to each other when they're trying to gain the upper hand.
Most of that scene was pretty good, but I want
John to fight some Dothraki.
Why?
Right now.
Why? Well, they're not going to fight. They're
cool.
Allies now, bro.
John's badass. John's
you
badass,
just want to. You just
fight some Dothraki.
This is no. You're missing the point. The thing you should want to see is a dragon come up to John and smell him and be like, "Whoa!" And everybody in the room is like, "Whoa!" Dragon is not killing Jon Snow. Why? Because the dragon would know that he's Targaryen. That's awesome.
Probably.
Yeah.
Who knows? That might happen.
I think it's going to happen. I think
it's very likely to happen.
Chris, I was going to say, Chris, did you quit the podcast in disgust?
No.
For a while?
I'm listening. I enjoyed these first three episodes a lot. Mm. I think that there are definitely some quibbles. They're moving quickly through, and they just gloss over through some stuff, but I think that they're forced to do some of that because the clock is ticking, and there's a lot to do. So I think they're jumping, and they're cutting some corners on the ship battle, I agree, is way too short. Mm. It's way too convenient.
Yep.
Oh, in past seasons, I think that
things are happening way too fast. Like, how is the whole Lannister army getting to Highgarden so fast? And
they've messed with the time. I'm not so worried about
they're going
the time,
quick.
How
I'm
they
not
handle
worried
time,
about the timeline.
But,
yeah,
but the things that they're cutting corners on are those key set pieces. That you know, the fight to take Casterly Rock, that would have been a gigantic set piece that lasts 20 minutes in previous seasons, but this time, you know, it takes them 5 minutes.
Well, if they are making choices like that, potentially they're building to other set pieces that will be as big as anything
we've ever seen. Oh, for sure. There'll be a huge set piece that involves armies clashing and dragons smoking people. And that will involve, I'm sure, King's Landing. And there will also be multiple, I'm assuming, set pieces involving the Night King.
Well, just from the teaser, we know that some of our heroes go north to confront the Night King and his army at some point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of the entire series is,
well,
ice
I mean,
and fire.
There's this season and then one more, right? So I feel like this season they're wrapping up a lot of the who's in charge of the Seven Kingdoms kind of a stuff.
Yeah.
And then next season, I feel like they'll focus on fighting the Night King and getting that all solved.
We'll see. There's like 10 or 11 episodes left in the entire series.
Totally.
Any
other scene for you guys? I have one small scene, but if you guys have anything else, you can go first.
I have one small thing to bring up.
Yeah.
As you guys know, I've discovered Wynonna Earp on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not a great show. I think they're in season 3 now on Sci-Fi, and I'm still working on season 1. I don't feel the need to binge watch through that. But I'll watch an episode occasionally. It's kind of fun when your fandoms collide.
Mm.
Well, on Wynonna Earp, they have played several songs by an artist that I love called Dorothy. She's this awesome rocker.
Great band.
And I, Yeah, I've seen them. I saw them play at Valley Bar a few months ago, and they're awesome live. Well, they've used some of that band's music Winona Earp. Oh, yeah. And the lead singer, Dorothy Martin, the band is named after her, Dorothy, is a fan of the show, and she will tweet about episodes that she's watching.
Oh, wow.
This, like, badass rocker woman and this, show about badass demon killing women. It's Winona Earp and her sister and, her gang of other dude. And it's like, she's a badass, wisecracking, ass-kicking woman with a magical gun. And it's fun when she, tweets about the episode because she loves it. And they, the official Twitter for the show will tweet at her about her songs and stuff. It's fun when that stuff kind of happens. So I recently watched an episode or two, and I follow, I think, the official Winona Earp Twitter feed, and I follow the Dorothy Twitter feed. So when they kind of intersect and they talk to each other, it's kind of fun. So That's been a fun little thing that's happened over the last couple weeks, is seeing that go on. Because she'll live tweet episodes, and it's fun how much she likes the show. She's a fan, and they use her music in the show all the time. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Christopher, do you have any other scene?
The only thing I'll mention is I'm current on Dark Matter. You guys watch that show on Sci-Fi?
No.
Watch Dark Matter.
Tell us more. Uh-oh.
It's a sci-fi show. It's sort of your standard ensemble on a ship.
This is the one where people wake up and they're like, they fell asleep.
No memory. Their memories have been wiped.
Totally.
Their names are 1 through 6.
Uh-huh.
There's 1, 2, and that's what they call themselves. And you learn through the course of the seasons, you learn about their backstory and what they're all about. But then they develop into sort of this ragtag family that is, in the midst of a larger conflict, and the characters
kind of Firefly-esque.
It is it's far less space western, but yes,
okay.
It's very much a Firefly-esque ensemble on a ship.
Have you watched Killjoys, Christopher? That's supposed to be pretty good.
I have never watched Killjoys. That is a similar show?
It's supposed to be
sci-fi.
People are relating it. They say the two are very similar, and
yeah.
I was curious if you had watched that at all. I think I might add it to my queue
sort of
and watch it.
Dark Matter versus Killjoys, but
right.
I have not watched Killjoys.
They're like space bounty hunters, I think, is what it is.
Yeah.
They run around space hunting people down. It's kind of episodic.
Yep.
In that way,
it's a B-level sci-fi show, but I like it.
Yeah,
and
full of Canadian actors.
Yeah,
yes, Canadian actors who have been on other Canadian shows.
That's crazy.
Been in at least one episode of Supernatural.
Yeah,
yes.
every actor that works in Vancouver, Canada.
Because they've been through 13 seasons.
Jesus. Does CW own Sci-Fi? Are they related in any way? Because
I don't think so.
Because it's like Sci-Fi and CW, they all film their stuff up there. So I wonder if they're, I don't know.
Vancouver, man, it's cheap to film up there.
Totally, totally.
That's why they do it.
Well, I mean, it used to be cheap. I don't know how cheap it is anymore with all these shows going. But,
true Steve.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's it for scene for me.
Cool. Yeah. The only one I have is Rick and Morty Season 3 is back. This is not a child's cartoon. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, that it's the most, dark, absurd science fiction cartoon ever. Pretty hilarious. The second episode is freaking bonkers. It's really good, and I'm happy it's back. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. So,
where can we find Rick and Morty?
You can go watch, I think, all the episodes on AdultSwim.com. I watched the first two episodes. You don't even need a cable provider. You just watch, stream them online. You can watch the
previous
first two
seasons.
Three seasons. They're short. They're like 10 episode seasons. But I think you could definitely watch the first two of season 3, because they released the first one months ago on April Fool's, and then they released the second episode this weekend because they were having a lot of problems getting this season done, apparently. So, yeah, they finally released. So you can watch those two, at least. Show is absurd. Just violent and crazy.
I've heard wonderful things about Rick and Morty.
It's
so fun.
It's Back to the Future mixed with, like, all these sci-fi genres, but with a crazy narcissistic drunk is the scientist who just values nothing because everything is infinite and there's infinite space and there's infinite dimensions, so he feels like nothing you do matters, so he just kills people constantly and he does amoral things, but he's so likable that you keep watching, you know? He's not the bad guy. He's just hilarious. Morty's like the emotional center, you know? He keeps him from like really murdering and doing terrible things. but it's pretty good. It's fun, and it's Dan Harmon writes it, so it's really funny. But yeah. That's all my scene. Let's move on to some red. Andrew, what do you have for red?
I was actually just reading Agatha Christie, A Murder on the Orient Express, before we started recording.
Did you finish it? One of you finished it, didn't they?
Oh. Christopher finished it. He was listening to it, I believe, and he announced that he had finished
now
it.
Now I have to listen to it too. Dang it.
Yeah, no, I'm going to. I mean, it's a short book. I just haven't been reading much of late at all. But, I mean, you could sit and read it in one sitting. It's only like 150 pages long, and halfway through it, and it moves along really well. The pacing of the writing is great. The mystery, Pierrot is into his investigation now, so he's questioning people.
Hercule Poirot
with his impressive mustaches.
Yes.
He has impressive mustaches that he maintains. He has a mustache maintenance kit, and he, you know, waxes and combs them, keeps them sharp.
That's really talked about in the book?
He talks about his mustache maintenance, not in, like, great detail. An
element of his character, for sure.
He is quite the dapper gentleman. He is always well-dressed. His mustaches are always well-groomed. It is excellent. He's a gentleman, first and foremost.
All right.
Beyond a brilliant detective. So he's already uncovered some evidence, and he's deduced some things, and now he's questioning the potential witnesses.
As I said to my message to you guys, totally understand. I mean, there is a reason why Agatha Christie is the icon she is, because every mystery trope, like every single one, is distilled and perfectly realized in this book. It's you understand sort of everyone is trying to do what she accomplished in her book.
I can absolutely see that.
Yep. So I enjoyed that book very, very much. It was the first time I had listened to it / read it, and I was extremely
impressed. Downloading it right now.
There you go, bud. You won't have any regrets.
Okay,
me.
Cool.
No.
Sweet. All right. Any other red, Andrew?
Nope, that's what I got right
Christopher,
now.
Christopher, what do you have other red?
I do. I am on book 3 of
Say that again. You broke out.
The Trade, Volume 3 of Descender.
Descender, ah.
Yes, extremely interesting world, universe building, characters are interesting, the art style's awesome. I highly recommend reading that book.
The art style is awesome. I actually got book 2. I haven't started it yet, but I got book 2 because you keep talking about it on the show.
Yes, so. I just finished book 2, and I'm on to book 3, and it's awesome. It's really great.
That's awesome.
Who writes that book, Christopher? Descenders?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I do not know the answer.
It's Jeff Lemire. I have the book right here.
Jeff Lemire. Nice. Yeah. There we go. Jeff Lemire.
Awesome. I have it in my hand.
Good job.
Awesome.
I have that. And then I also listened to and finished the Fred Saberhagen book called The First Book of Swords.
Ooh.
Have you heard about this series?
I have not.
It is a fantasy series that I actually read like the first four books of in the 80s when I was a teenager. But really kind of lost my way in terms of reading it. And I saw it on Audible and said, you know what? I'm looking for a series to get going, a fantasy sort of type series. And I decided to give it a try. And it is an interesting book. It's about gods on Earth. Essentially, one god, Vulcan, forging 12 swords, and then they distribute those swords to humans.
Okay.
And then is that this entire series is all about humans fighting over and using and trying to figure out all of the swords, and they all have different powers, and they all play a different role, and there is an overarching sort of meta plot that involves the gods and the backstory of this world and how we got to where we are and the role of the gods and the role of the swords. And I actually very much enjoyed the first book, so I will continue on the series.
Wow.
It was good.
That's cool. Okay. That sounds neat. I'm going to add that to my wish list, I think.
Saberhagen?
Fred Saberhagen.
Okay,
yep.
Cool.
The first book of swords.
Four different swords introduced in book one. Mm. There is Town Saber. There is Dragon Slicer.
Give me an example of like one of the powers the sword does. Like
Town Saber. They all look similar. All these swords look similar, except on their hilt, they have different designs. So on Town Saber, I'll give you an example. It looks like on the hilt, it looks like the crenellations of a castle.
Okay.
And so its power is activated when the person wielding it is defending unarmed persons that are in a enclosed or confined space.
Ooh. Hmm.
And so there are multiple instances where – and actually it doesn't have to be an enclosed confined space, I should say, because when they are defending others who aren't able to defend themselves and the sword activates and essentially takes over – the fight. Uh-huh. And so the person wielding the sword is at the totally at the whim of the sword power, mm-hmm. and will fight until the threat is vanquished, or until the human who is holding the swords is no longer able to hold the swords. But you cannot die while you are wielding it when its power is activated, but you can absolutely die after the fight is over because you do not feel the injuries, you don't feel the stab wounds.
Oh, so that guy's getting stabbed and he's just like keeps fighting because the sword
keeps
is
fighting until the fight is
the power of the sword
drives
you know,
the person is to defend those that it's defending. So yes, and there are multiple instances, and then there's Dragon Slicer, which as its name suggests, it will pierce and find the weak and vital points of any dragon that you confront. There is a sword that I'm forgetting its name right now, but it gives you luck. So when you are in situations that there are potential random outcomes, luck will always be with you.
Whoa.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So
they're really interesting. Lots of different powers, lots of different swords that have different abilities. It's a very interesting series. So I've finished
all these
one and
all these MacGuffins built into the story of things for right. you know, things for people to pursue. That's
yes.
automatic yes. kind of tension, and that's cool.
And there are some interesting focuses on some humans who appear to have the ability to wield more than one sword at one time.
Uh-huh.
That they potentially might be offspring of the gods, so they may be able to influence. The swords may clash and cancel each other out in most instances, but these individuals seem to have – some individuals, at least one in particular, seems to have the ability to wield more than one, and figuring out what the impact of that is interesting, and the rest of the series will explore some of that. But really it's about humans trying to chase down these MacGuffins and wield these weapons of power. So
You said there's four books currently. Do we know how many there's expected to be in the series? Oh,
no, the series is long over. There are four swords that we know of that are introduced in book one.
Okay.
I think there are eight or nine total books.
Mm. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, if the series is done, then we don't have to George R. R. Martin this thing and wait 6 years.
No. Yeah, the series is done.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. Written in the 80s, 70s and 80s.
I see.
Sweet.
All right. The great times of fantasy series was the 80s, I believe.
Much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
The only thing I've read is Invincible Volume 22. I continue to work on Invincible books. This one, I don't know if you remember this, Andrew, but he gets like reboot. You know, he gets shown. He gets sent back in time or shown a glimpse of what his life could be like if he could do it all over again.
Yeah,
kind of an interesting idea. Has like a lot of impacts from his choices at the end of that book, and so it's definitely a cliffhanger at the end of 22. And so I need to pick up 23 to find out what the hell happens, because it's pretty interesting. I guess this book, they're going to end it on 150, and I'm in the 130s now, I believe. So
yeah, how many are left?
Yeah, I mean,
think there's maybe 10 issues left.
Yeah,
I didn't get much past. I'm still in the, I'm in the mid 130s as well.
Yeah.
So I've got a stack of Invincible books I haven't read, but there should be, I think, probably maybe 8 issues left in the series.
Yeah, overall, this is one of the best comic book series ever written, and so I'm really happy to be like working on it and see it out. You know, I feel like
completely
the first year I went to Comic-Con, I bought Invincible Volume 1 way back when it was easier
don't
to get
we
tickets
have a signed edition by Kirkman or Robert.
I left my John copy with you because I didn't want to split up the collection, but
it's here. It's in my
apartment. Signed by Kirkman and Ryan Ottley. Those guys back then were just sitting at the Image table, not being surrounded by anybody.
Kirkman had his
before Kirkman was
money.
Yeah. Like now, if Robert Kirkman's sitting at a table, there'd be a giant crowd around him, and a giant line
Kirkman
of people
can
waiting.
Fill Hall H himself now. So.
Totally, yeah,
he has
exactly.
That kind of cachet and star power.
Exactly. So I just I walked up to the Image booth and just got it signed by him, like no problem. It's hilarious.
Yeah, well, that's hold on to that thing. That thing's awesome.
Yeah, it's sure. Very cool. Very cool. Let's move on to some Played. Christopher, do you have some Played?
Yes, the only thing I want to talk about is that I have re-engaged with Civilization VI.
Ooh!
And that game is awesome, and I am totally immersed in it right now. I have a game running on my computer here in Tucson, and I have a different game running on my computer up in Phoenix.
Nice.
Who are you playing? What civilization are you playing as in Tucson?
Okay, so the civilization I'm playing as in Tucson is Germany.
Okay.
I set up my game to randomly assign me a civ, and so I received Germany, and so I'm playing as the Germans. And the game in Phoenix is they just downloaded this, they just released this new civ, and I set it up random again. But I got the new civ, which is Nubia.
Like an African kingdom?
Yes. Really okay. Cool. Really cool. Interesting, unique units. I've got those two games running on my computer down here and then my computer up in Phoenix and just loving the hell out of the game. It's really awesome. Fun. I was getting my ass handed to me in the game in Phoenix. And I was at war with two nations, England and Germany, and these games are so fun. And England is leading technologically, and so they had two caravels, more advanced ships than I had, and they were attacking and going to take over one of my cities. And so I did the leadership thing and sued for peace, and now I'm paying out my ass so that I have,
oh my God,
still have peace. That's but awesome. I saved my people in that city, and now I'm dedicated to attacking and crushing England.
Secretly working to over.
Once my peace treaty runs out, I will attack the hell out of them.
Yeah. Building That's back awesome. Your forces to exact revenge.
I need a window where I can build up back my forces, yeah. And then I'm going to attack London.
So. Nice. I mean, I'm not saying you're, you know, Nazi Germany in any way, but I mean that's exactly what happened in Nazi Germany after World War One. So,
yeah,
are you a totalitarian dictatorship?
Are you trying to wipe out one singular race that is pissing you off?
No, dude.
No, okay, good.
There's no genocide
happening.
I don't have any genocidal tendencies.
That's good. Okay, all right.
I mean, historically, that's what happens after a country is by a conqueror.
The Civ people were smart not to include Hitler as a leader.
That's good. Yeah, thank God.
Legitimately, the game sounds really interesting.
It's a much older German monarch.
Oh, no, of course. It's like a Prussian iteration of Germany. Yeah, sure. Yes, those kind of something that's, like that. No, that's really cool. I like
it. It is very fun. The music is awesome. The design of the game.
Different civilizations are there in the game that you can potentially play as?
I think right now there are 20.
Wow.
Release expansions with new civilizations?
They do, and I paid for the season pass when I first came out, and so I get them all.
That's cool.
Oh, I should say that one of my other games that I'm running, I am playing as the Vikings.
Cool.
Yeah, it's actually Norway is the nation, but they have all the characteristics and unique units of the Vikings, so that's fun too.
Oh, that's fun.
That's cool. Yeah, man.
Good stuff. Yep.
That's good stuff. Yeah. Andrew.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Question. Is it PvP or is it PvE?
PvE. Like, set up
PvE. Okay. Is there a PvP aspect?
Absolutely. You can play PvP, and Sean and I in previous iterations of Civ have played PvP. We haven't played with Civ 6. I think he's still playing Civ 5.
Okay.
But we haven't played much PvP for a while. But yeah, we've done it in the past. You can definitely play real-time PvP online.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah, man.
Andrew, what play do you have?
I don't have much. I mean, I played Marvel Heroes Omega a little bit. I played some Game Pigeon games. They released a couple new ones, I think. And I actually played it's called Cup Pong, I think. On the app, beer pong.
Yeah,
you toss ping pong balls into red solo cups.
Sure,
and you try. I'm always amazed by how good the physics are with those games.
Yeah,
like the pool game had really good physics. Cup pong has great physics. It's tossing this, kind of digital plastic ping pong ball, and how it bounces. I played many IRL games of beer pong, and it's kind of feels the same way when you toss a ping pong ball. The ball reacts like it does. So it's fun how they get that so right, in my opinion, for that. It's a good game to kind of, you know, pass the time. And but yeah, Cup Pong on the Game Pigeon app is, I played a couple matches of that versus a couple people. And
while you're playing,
fun. The physics have been fun.
While you're playing this game, do you feel yourself getting inebriated while this is happening?
No, that's the drawback of the game. Is
that's unfortunate. Yeah,
I miss beer pong's games, man. Beer pong was fun.
I went to a party like a month ago, and they had beer pong, and I crushed, dude. I still crush at beer pong. Beer pong champion.
I hesitate to admit this, but I can honestly say I've never played beer pong in my life.
You know, it's very bro-y. It reminds me a lot of that, but it's still fun, you know?
It's very bro-y, dude. It's a bunch of dudes. I mean, we had beer pong tables in college that we, like, everybody that came over and played a game of beer pong, we, like, had them sign the table. It was, like, a fun goofball thing we had. We did when we were seniors in college. Mm. We bought, like, stencils, so we always had the cups put in the same spot every single time. Yeah, no, we took it seriously.
Yeah, it's pretty absurd, but it's still a fun game to play.
There's like formalized beer pong tournaments now. You can compete in beer pong tournaments. There's like organized things that you can do now
that's just silly. But like sitting around talking with friends, playing a game that gets you drunk, I'm all for that, I think.
Yeah,
so.
We'll play a game or two.
We'll play a game. I mean, yeah, you have a ping pong table, don't you, Chris?
When the four brothers are back together, play, you know what? I think we should play a game of ping pong.
I think that'd be so much fun.
Yeah, all right.
Well, this is happening.
I got Chris on my team.
Daniel's played lots of games.
I got Chris on my team. I'm sure Daniel has played beer pong before in his life. Oh, yes, man.
At least 100,000 times.
Yes. the only played I have is I have a couple played, actually. One is a new game came out called Fortnite. Came out this week. It's a basically a end of the world game, very like cartoony graphics. You build a base, there's a lot of like gathering resources and then building bases and defending.
I've seen the video of this game. It looks fun.
It's a lot of fun, a lot of character stuff, a lot of micromanaging that is not very fun. A lot of like searching. You get rewarded for like searching and looting and exploring. It's a lot of building bases. Like once you learn the game mechanics, it's a lot of fun, but it takes a long time to learn how to build a proper base, how to defend your your base very well. It's pretty hard to play by yourself, so you know I recommend playing with other people. It's pretty good.
Is it a free to play game?
It's
there's a cost.
So I tried to find a free to play download on Xbox Live because I think it is free to play on the computer. That's why it's misleading. But
it's
I didn't find
it. Free to play on console, but Xbox, there's a charge or something?
Yeah. Well, basically, what I had to do was buy a pack. I bought a $40 pack, and it included a bunch of chests, a bunch of characters, and it unlocked a bunch of things, and it unlocked the game for me. I've read online that it's free, but I think that might just be PC. I'm not sure. I didn't see a free option on Live. I was just okay with it. Was $40, so I was like, okay, I'll spend $40 on this game because my buddies are playing it too, and it looked like fun. But there are like problems with it for sure. Like I'm a little disappointed that there's a lot of different kinds of characters and rare characters. It's kind of like Fire Emblem in that way, where you get a character and then you use that character to play. And there's like, I have a green type of this character, but there's like a rare, you know, it's like an uncommon, and there's like a rare version, a legendary version of that same character.
So it's a green, blue, purple,
and orange. Yeah.
Orange.
So it's a little weird that like, you know, I have all these guns that I, you know, are like blue guns, you know, and I have like all these like green characters that are kind of rare, but I don't really want to play, or I have to unlock to use them kind of stuff. There's a lot of like grindage in this game, but it is fun. Mm-hmm. It is fun. Like the guns are fun. It's fun building bases. It's you know, it's fun exploring, but there's a lot of grindage and a lot of busy work, I will say, in the game. So
okay.
That's my only problem with it. But okay. And I downloaded the Destiny 2 beta. I played it over the weekend that they had their beta going.
Yeah.
I will say, Destiny 2 kind of feels like a DLC, not necessarily a brand new game. That's my biggest takeaway from the weekend is...
from playing a beta with one story mission and two game types.
Totally. It didn't see... It looked exactly the same. The characters felt very similar. It didn't feel like a new game. It should feel like Destiny 2, you know? And it was okay, I guess. One mission, one strike that was really hard.
I actually heard really good things about the strike.
The strike was fun.
How fun it was.
The strike was a lot of fun, but it was really hard. The final boss, it took us like four tries to get him down. It was tough.
I also heard that one of the critiques about the Destiny 2 beta was how underpowered the characters felt in PvE. That they felt they didn't do enough damage enough that you felt like you were just lobbing spitballs at the bosses because they just don't take damage.
I don't necessarily I never had that thought, but maybe okay. You know, I it felt about right. It felt like Destiny 1, like honestly, with an update. It felt like Destiny 1 with an update. That's really it. It didn't look better. The screens are the same. The skill tree was different.
They don't look. I mean, the video that I've seen of the gameplay PvP game, the screens don't look the same.
I felt like they looked very similar.
Well, I mean, they've iterated on it. I think they're similar, but they look cleaner.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was I was just expecting it to be like a better looking game.
Halo 1 upgrading to Halo 2.
That's what I'm saying. Like it should look much better.
I mean, Halo 2 was a totally new engine.
Yeah.
I don't think that Destiny 2 is being built on on a whole new engine. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the new game drops in September.
I'll be playing it. We're all going to buy it.
I'm probably going to get it. Like I mean, I just feel like I was kind of underwhelmed by it, I guess. The strike was.
Did you play any PvP?
I played a little PvP, but the guns, they've changed up the gun mechanics a lot. So I tried out a few different weapons with very little success. So I only played like three matches, to be honest, because I was just getting smoked. Because like I was using an auto rifle, and the auto rifle I had was just not good. It was just not the kind of style that I like. The scout rifle I had, not a good scout rifle for what I was using. Didn't feel right. Wasn't putting guys down fast enough. I tried shotguns, just wasn't working for me. So I gave up after three because I was like, dude, I just don't have the right weapons.
It just wasn't any fun.
Yeah, the weapons weren't doing it for me. You get those certain weapons where you're like, this is my PvP gun. You know, that's what I did in Destiny 1. Yeah. I was like, I got that one auto rifle that was my go-to. Like the Cirrus regime, I barely used in PvE. But PvP, man, you rock people with that gun.
Yeah,
like
I agree. So did I.
And I just didn't have that weapon. I didn't have the weapon that I was like, this is the one. I feel like I'm getting it. You know, it's the same game. Like I felt myself being able to shoot people. I put people down. You know, I was headshotting guys and it was okay. But just didn't have the right weapons. So,
okay.
Andrew. What
yeah.
What trivia do you have for us today?
trivia tonight, appropriately.
Game of Thrones trivia? Uh-oh. And we're back. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. Skype took a little dump. Andrew, trivia. Yeah.
Trivia is Agatha Christie themed this evening.
Oh, Agatha Christie.
Okay. Her hero, Hercule Poirot, yes. Who appears as the hero in the murder on the Orient Express. His first appearance was in 1920, and the Agatha Christie estate has authorized further stories that can feature Hercule Poirot, and his most recent published work appeared in 1997. Agatha Christie has long since passed, but authors have been able to continue to write Hercule Poirot as a character. Within five, plus or minus, how many appearances in novels and short stories has Hercule Poirot made?
Oh, wow.
Plus or minus five.
Plus or minus five?
28.
I have no idea. I'm going to say 13.
28.
You are both way low.
Whoa!
From 1920 to 1997, Hercule Poirot has appeared in 45 stories and novels.
Damn!
45?
The most famous, of course, being The Murder on the Orient Express, which is published in 1934. Originally published under the title Murder in the Calais Coach.
What was the one in 97?
The title of the one published in 1997, it's a short story, While the Light Lasts and Other Stories.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Yeah, 45 separate appearances.
That's crazy.
Is it
just because he's like a James Bond type character where he's just like so interesting?
He's more of a dandy Sherlock Holmes.
Well, what I'm saying is he's more like Sherlock Holmes.
He's
like an interesting character, and so people want to do things with him. Is that the idea? Like they want
basically
to...
I mean he's well traveled, he's well schooled, he's a gentleman.
Okay.
He doesn't have the idiosyncratic kind of nature of Holmes.
He was a detective and then he left the police force and became a man about detecting.
I think Holmes is really based in London and he interacts with the world via Watson. Poirot is much more his own kind of animal. He doesn't have a sidekick that appears in every story with him. At least I don't think he does. He doesn't have a sidekick in The Murder on the Orient Express. He is his own man who travels throughout the world. Like The Murder on the Orient Express.
Mystery seems to find him.
Yep.
What I think is the most interesting, and I'm excited about this movie, is there's such a big cast, and each character is like interesting and different and a very well-known actor, how
starkly drawn all these characters are. So far it's been very interesting to read.
I don't like that Johnny Depp is in it though. I don't want to watch Johnny Depp anymore.
If the character that Johnny Depp plays is the character I think he is, you won't have to worry about it for too long.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is he the murdered?
I surmise that he is possibly the victim of the murder.
Victim of the murder. Interesting.
We'll see.
If you want to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kinginthenorth52@gmail.com. If you want to email the show, questions, comments, you should email us at brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. And, follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek @twitter.com, and then Brothers Geek Podcast on Facebook and brothersgeek.com. All those things.
Well, wonderful things.
All those wonderful things. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night, everybody.